2, at Jotapata. While the common people of Jotapata heard Jesus and his apostles gladly, and many accepted the gospel of the kingdom, it was the discourse of Jesus to the 24 on the second evening of their sojourn in this small town that distinguishes the Jotapata mission. Nathanael was confused in his mind about the Master's teachings concerning prayer, thanksgiving, and worship, and in response to his question, Jesus spoke at great length in further explanation of his teaching. Summarized in modern phraseology, this discourse may be presented as emphasizing the following points. 1. The conscious and persistent regard for iniquity in the heart of man gradually destroys the prayer connection of the human soul with the spirit circuits of communication between man and his Maker. Naturally, God hears the petition of his child, but when the human heart deliberately and persistently harbors the concepts of iniquity, there gradually ensues the loss of personal communion between the earth child and his heavenly Father. 2. That prayer which is inconsistent with the known and established laws of God is an abomination to the paradise deities. If man will not listen to the gods as they speak to their creation in the laws of spirit, mind, and matter, the very act of such deliberate and conscious disdain by the creature turns the ears of spirit personalities away from hearing the personal petitions of such lawless and disobedient mortals. Jesus quoted to his apostles from the prophet Zechariah, "But they refused to hearken, and pulled away the shoulder, and stopped their ears, that they should not hear. Yes, they made their hearts adamant, like a stone, lest they should hear my law, and the words which I sent by my Spirit through the prophets. Therefore did the results of their evil thinking come as a great wrath upon their guilty heads. And so it came to pass that they cried for mercy, but there was no ear open to hear." And then Jesus quoted the proverb of the wise man who said, "He who turns away his ear from hearing the divine law, even his prayer shall be an abomination." 3. By opening the human end of the channel of the God-man communication, mortals make immediately available the ever-flowing stream of divine ministry to the creatures of the worlds. When man hears God's Spirit speak within the human heart, inherent in such an experience is the fact that God simultaneously hears that man's prayer. Even the forgiveness of sin operates in this same unerring fashion. The Father in heaven has forgiven you even before you have thought to ask him, but such forgiveness is not available in your personal religious experience until such a time as you forgive your fellow men. God's forgiveness, in fact, is not conditioned upon your forgiving your fellows, but in experience it is exactly so conditioned. And this fact of the synchrony of divine and human forgiveness was thus recognized and linked together in the prayer which Jesus taught the apostles. 4. There is a basic law of justice in the universe which mercy is powerless to circumvent. The unselfish glories of paradise are not possible of reception by a thoroughly selfish creature of the realms of time and space. Even the infinite love of God cannot force the salvation of eternal survival upon any mortal creature who does not choose to survive. Mercy has great latitude of bestowal, but, after all, there are mandates of justice which even love combined with mercy cannot effectively abrogate. Again, Jesus quoted from the Hebrew Scriptures, "I have called, and you refused to hear. I stretched out my hand, but no man regarded. You have set at naught all my counsel, and you have rejected my reproof. And because of this rebellious attitude, it becomes inevitable that you shall call upon me and fail to receive an answer. Having rejected the way of life, you may seek me diligently in your times of suffering, but you will not find me." 5. They who would receive mercy must show mercy. Judge not that you be not judged. With the spirit with which you judge others, you also shall be judged. Mercy does not wholly abrogate universe fairness. In the end, it will prove true. Whoso stops his ears to the cry of the poor, he also shall some day cry for help, and no one will hear him. The sincerity of any prayer is the assurance of its being heard. The spiritual wisdom and universe consistency of any petition is the determiner of the time, manner, and degree of the answer. A wise father does not literally answer the foolish prayers of his ignorant and inexperienced children, albeit the children may derive much pleasure and real soul satisfaction from the making of such absurd petitions. 6. When you have become wholly dedicated to the doing of the will of the Father in heaven, the answer to all your petitions will be forthcoming, because your prayers will be in full accordance with the Father's will, and the Father's will is ever manifest throughout His vast universe. What the true Son desires and the infinite Father wills is. Such a prayer cannot remain unanswered, and no other sort of petition can possibly be fully answered. 7. The cry of the righteous is the faith act of the child of God, which opens the door of the Father's storehouse of goodness, truth, and mercy. And these good gifts have long been in waiting for the Son's approach and personal appropriation. Prayer does not change the divine attitude toward man, but it does change man's attitude toward the changeless Father. The motive of the prayer gives it right of way to the divine ear, not the social, economic, or outward religious status of the one who prays. 8. Prayer may not be employed to avoid the delays of time or to transcend the handicaps of space. Prayer is not designed as a technique for aggrandizing self or for gaining unfair advantage over one's fellows. A thoroughly selfish soul cannot pray in the true sense of the word. Said Jesus, "Let your supreme delight be in the character of God, and He shall surely give you the sincere desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord, trust in Him, and He will act. For the Lord hears the cry of the needy, and He will regard the prayer of the destitute." 9. I have come forth from the Father. If, therefore, you are ever in doubt as to what you would ask of the Father, ask in My name, and I will present your petition in accordance with your real needs and desires, and in accordance with My Father's will. Guard against the great danger of becoming self-centered in your prayers. Avoid praying much for yourself. Pray more for the spiritual progress of your brethren. Avoid materialistic praying. Pray in the Spirit, and for the abundance of the gifts of the Spirit. 10. When you pray for the sick and afflicted, do not expect that your petitions will take the place of loving and intelligent ministry to the necessities of these afflicted ones. Pray for the welfare of your families, friends, and fellows, but especially pray for those who curse you, and make loving petitions for those who persecute you. But when to pray, I will not say. Only the Spirit that dwells within you may move you to the utterance of those petitions which are expressive of your inner relationship with the Father of Spirits. 11. Many resort to prayer only when in trouble. Such a practice is thoughtless and misleading. True, you do well to pray when harassed, but you should also be mindful to speak as a son to your Father even when all goes well with your soul. Let your real petitions always be in secret. Do not let men hear your personal prayers. Prayers of thanksgiving are appropriate for groups of worshipers, but the prayer of the soul is a personal matter. There is but one form of prayer which is appropriate for all God's children, and that is, "Nevertheless, your will be done." 12. All believers in this gospel should pray sincerely for the extension of the kingdom of heaven. Of all the prayers of the Hebrew Scriptures, he commented most approvingly on the petition of the psalmist, "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Purge me from secret sins, and keep back your servant from presumptuous transgression." Jesus commented at great length on the relation of prayer to careless and offending speech, quoting, "Set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth. Keep the door of my lips." "The human tongue," said Jesus, "is a member which few men can tame, but the spirit within can transform this unruly member into a kindly voice of tolerance and an inspiring minister of mercy." 13. Jesus taught that the prayer for divine guidance over the pathway of earthly life was next in importance to the petition for a knowledge of the Father's will. In reality, this means a prayer for divine wisdom. Jesus never taught that human knowledge and special skill could be gained by prayer, but he did teach that prayer is a factor in the enlargement of one's capacity to receive the presence of the divine Spirit. When Jesus taught his associates to pray in the Spirit and in truth, he explained that he referred to praying sincerely and in accordance with one's enlightenment, to praying wholeheartedly and intelligently, earnestly, and steadfastly. 14. Jesus warned his followers against thinking that their prayers would be rendered more efficacious by ornate repetitions, eloquent phraseology, fasting, penance, or sacrifices. But he did exhort his believers to employ prayer as a means of leading up through thanksgiving to true worship. Jesus deplored that so little of the spirit of thanksgiving was to be found in the prayers and worship of his followers. He quoted from the scriptures on this occasion, saying, "It is a good thing to give thanks to the Lord and to sing praises to the name of the Most High, to acknowledge his loving kindness every morning and his faithfulness every night, for God has made me glad through his work. In everything I will give thanks according to the will of God." 15. And then Jesus said, "Be not constantly over-anxious about your common needs. Be not apprehensive concerning the problems of your earthly existence, but in all these things, by prayer and supplication, with the spirit of sincere thanksgiving, let your needs be spread out before your Father who is in heaven." Then he quoted from the scriptures, "I will praise the name of God with a song, and will magnify him with thanksgiving. And this will please the Lord better than the sacrifice of an ox or bullock with horns and hooves." 16. Jesus taught his followers that, when they had made their prayers to the Father, they should remain for a time in silent receptivity to afford the indwelling Spirit the better opportunity to speak to the listening soul. The Spirit of the Father speaks best to man when the human mind is in an attitude of true worship. We worship God by the aid of the Father's indwelling Spirit and by the illumination of the human mind through the ministry of truth. Worship, taught Jesus, makes one increasingly like the being who is worshiped. Worship is a transforming experience whereby the finite gradually approaches and ultimately attains the presence of the infinite. And many other truths did Jesus tell his apostles about man's communion with God, but not many of them could fully encompass his teaching.